The title of tonight's talk is What's Love Got to Do with It? I thought it was kind of catchy. And I also think it's a very good question, because there's a big difference between what we think of as love generally and the Buddhist favorite kind, which is metta, unconditional love for all beings. About a month ago, I gave a talk that included the notion that loving kindness might be overstating it for a lot of us. It might feel a little uncomfortable, the idea that we really have to love everybody. Tenisaro Bhikkhu had an article that I was very happy to find in which he said, chill, it's really about goodwill, kindness, and that we will benefit greatly if we have this attitude toward all beings. And I think it may actually go beyond that. I think that this simple attitude of wishing well and kindness leads us into a profound ability to accept things as they are, particularly people as they are, rather than as we would like them to be. Really, isn't that what it's about? To accept the present moment as it is, which doesn't mean we have to endorse it. We're not approving of it, but we're accepting it. We're allowing ourselves to really be with it and to engage with it wholeheartedly, just as it is. Whether it's a wholehearted effort to change the causes and conditions that led to this moment, or it's a wholehearted celebration of the joy that's available in that moment. And when we have that level of acceptance, we're happy. Even if what's going on right now is disturbing, even if there's some unkindness that we see happening in the world around us, when we're able to accept it, we're able to do something about it wisely, and not to use up our energy resisting the reality of the situation, but to go into action. Yes, this is how it is, and now I'm going to engage with it this way. I would submit that it's very similar to accepting people as we find them. There's a mistake that we often make, in fact, kind of all of the time, the idea that we know people, because I can change in a heartbeat. I can go from happy-go-lucky to really focused on something that, you know, I feel needs changing. And the mood and my ability to engage with other people, night and day, it just changes very, it can change very quickly. And that's true with other people. And sometimes the way a person interacts with others will be consistent for months or years, and then they go through a major change. And it's almost as if they're somebody else. So when this song came out in the 1980s, What's Love Got to Do with It? Well, it was a really sexy song. You know, it was steamy voice and nice rhythm to it. and this almost taunting, what's love got to do with it? No, no, that's not it. In a way, it was almost seductive. And it described a lot of my experience up to that point with love. Because at that point in my life, frankly, I didn't know what love was. I definitely felt it, but I didn't understand it very well. Looking at that title now, I am reminded of that moment when we're poised on not knowing yet if this is a relationship we want to embrace. Do I know this person well enough to really have a close friendship or enter a business partnership or get engaged or whatever the relationship is going to be? There is a period of indecision. And I am realizing now, after being married and in a relationship for many years, that that question can come up pretty much any day. What does love have to do with what's going on between us right now? So I turned to the Buddhists, and I really didn't want the lecture to be just about metta. I really wanted to get into what someone I know calls personal love. And I like that for purposes of this talk. It's the person A to person B kind of love that I'm talking about. There was one article by Bhikkhu Nyanasubhanu, also known as Leonard Price. This was an article that was posted in 2005. He wasn't really keen on personal love, or romantic love, I should say. He was making very clear the idea that when we idealize romantic love and get attached to the idea that it's the highest purpose in life, then we're in trouble. He says, if love is the highest thing to live for, then this is a hopeless universe. Because we should see in a calm hour that Cupid's arrows not only thrill us, but make us bleed. And he started quoting headlines like, man kills estranged lover, then self. Wife stabs husband in domestic quarrel. Love triangle leads to shooting. And he acknowledges that there's an argument to be made that this is hate and not love that gives rise to tragedies like this. But he asks, where has such hate come from if not from a prior attachment now broken? So the culprit isn't romance. The culprit is clinging. It's attachment. That attachment comes from many sources, but the one that leaps to my mind right away is wanting that person to be who we've come to believe they are. Back to this idea of thinking that we know somebody. I remember when I read a book by the Dalai Lama in which he said, it's a bad mistake to think that we ever really know someone else. Just in the day-to-day relationship, when someone fails to meet our expectation, there's that clinging. There's that resentment. You're not doing what I married you for. You're not, this isn't the kind of behavior I fell in love with. Leonard Price, in his article later, says that Henry Thoreau wrote, the only remedy for love is to love more. And the good monk said, we might amend this to say, the only remedy for love is to love better. The understanding and the practice of the Dharma do not destroy our capacity to love or enjoy love. Far from it. The Dharma purges the grasping, selfish qualities from our love. It makes it purer and nobler. So I'm not entirely sure that the Dharma has really purged the grasping, selfish qualities from my love. I know that it has definitely improved the situation, but I'm definitely not in a loving nirvana. And I think that this is the dilemma that practicing Buddhist lay people face, is that we do practice metta, we know what it is, we have a sense of how wonderful it is to just accept people as they are, flaws and all, and know that there are flaws, the things that drive us a little crazy, or sometimes a lot, come from their own suffering. And that if we can accept that, we can love without qualification, without insisting on any conditions. But then it's another matter entirely to do it consistently on a day-to-day basis. So it isn't smooth sailing by any means. And if we try to hold ourselves to too high a standard, it's just going to be frustrating. But we can try. We can try. And if we fail today, we can get up tomorrow and try some more. In an article from Gil Fronsdale, he says, it can be easy to love all beings in the abstract, but it can be a great challenge to do so when we have to live with them. The ability to bring love into all aspects of our life entails learning how to include love's presence. I love that idea. The presence of love, to bring it into this moment. While we speak to others, are in conflict with others, and are living with others. While this can be a daunting task, it begins with having the intention to do so. Yeah, it's going to be a daunting task. It's impossible to do it all the time. But it is possible to have the intention to do it all the time. And it is supported by appreciating each manifestation of love that we encounter. Even practicing loving kindness for the time it takes to snap the fingers is beneficial. Each drop of practice is significant, and as the Buddha said, with dripping drops of water, the water jug is filled. For me, it's important in this endeavor to give up the idea of the jug ever getting filled. To repeat that idea of having the intention be lofty, but the standard by which we judge ourselves, let that come down. And let us remember the progress that we've made over the years, over the weeks. A quotation by Bo Lazoff, who he was a prisoner and he continued to work with prisoners after he was released. And he's written a number of very moving books. He says, There is no spiritual practice more profound than being kind to one's family, neighbors, the cashier at the grocery store, an unexpected visitor, the con in the next cell, a stray cat or dog, or any other of the usually irrelevant or invisible beings who may cross our path in the course of a normal day. Certainly there are spiritual mysteries beyond description to explore. But as we mature, it becomes clear that those special experiences are only meaningful when they arise from and return to a life of ordinary kindness. When I've been practicing for about 5 years, and I was volunteering at the Zen Hospice Project, I got really confused about, well, I'm still confused about it, about how kind is it to give love on this personal basis? Because when we tell people how wonderful they are, it reinforces the idea of self, which is the source of all clinging, all causes of suffering, is this attachment to the idea of self. One of the problems with personal love can be that it's kind of like syrup to the ego. I'll love you, you love me, and we'll both feel great about ourselves. So I asked everybody I could find, every teacher, everyone in a position of more experience than I had, should we be doing this? The residents at the hospice really, I mean, they thrived on it. It was so important to them to see the people that they had loved and who loved them, and to be in that embrace of personal love. And when I developed a deep personal relationship with them, they really liked it, and I liked it. I remember my first one-on-one teacher was the volunteer coordinator, and she explained to me that people need to be able to love themselves first on the road to healing. And there are days when I need healing, and to have any smile by a stranger, any kindness come my way, helps me get over whatever it is that has wounded me. And later on in my experience with the hospice, there was, I've known this guy for 2 or 3 years. He was a long-term patient, and the arc of his being there was coming to an end. And he said to me, the great gift of being in this environment was watching the volunteers give love to the patients. And that he had first encountered the ability to love others by imitating what he saw the volunteers do. And the feeling of love arose in his heart. And he said, and then after a while I realized I loved myself too. The one caution in here is the one that Leonard Price gave us, that coming to love from a sense of incompletion is a recipe for long-term problems. The more we understand this flawed universe in which we live, the more skillfully we can live here, and the happier we will be. We love best when we do not love out of desperation. Which brings me back to acceptance of this flawed universe and of the flawed beings who surround us and the flawed beings who we are, and an acceptance of that. So it's very important not to confuse the idea of nirvana with what we should be, and certainly what we should have been a few moments ago, which we're now judging by that standard. We are what we are, and other people are what they are, which according to the Dalai Lama, we'll never completely know. But at any given moment, we see who they are being now. And we do have the capacity to accept that and to love. Thank you.